Hey everyone, this is Sally. I'm on the Dukan Show with OT and Reem.
You'll check it out. A whole new generation of young people today who belong nowhere.
But I prefer to be an outcast.
Third culture kids, where the concept of the Dukan is the corner shop or the top shop.
We are live outside. Hey yo, what's up, people?
What up, nation?
It's a revolution of expression.
You're tuned in to the Dukan Show. Stay tuned in.
Arab digital generation is shaping our identity, their creative expression, and their future. So please give a very warm welcome.
Welcome to your tribe.
I went to university. I got into my course and, you know, I started like, you know, interning with all of these amazing designers, but like I was a big girl.
Right.
So I never saw myself.
Right.
Like actually right. there. Like I wanted to be part of that world. So it was very weird, like disconnect, like I was a, you know, this brilliant fashion illustrator and stuff and whatever, but it did, there was this massive disconnect.
Yeah.
It's like, yeah, I want to be this. And I was like, but I would can't see myself there.
When you don't
so that's
see
why
your
I'm like
likeness.
Now, like yeah. at 43, 42, whatever, exploring style.
I think that's, well, first of all, it's conquering that sense that you don't belong there because you right? told yourself you didn't belong there because they yeah. told you you didn't belong
exactly.
there because you couldn't see yourself
exactly.
there. You know?
Exactly. This was before, you know, the Ashley Grahams and
yeah.
the…
And way before, you know, being, it's, you know,
I
body positivity and
100%.
Big girls and fashion.
That wasn't
and
happening in,
that wasn't
in,
a thing.
In, you know, the late 90s, early 2000s. So it was just like… Oh, okay. I'm so happy for where, you know, fashion is going now and, you know, where,
right.
you know, where I'm at now
yeah.
in my head as well going, okay, let's explore this. This is cool. This is cool. Suits and this is new to me, this suit stuff. And I just bought suits like in the last couple of years. Seriously.
Welcome to the
wow.
club.
Yes.
It is my favorite thing in the world.
Oh my God. I'm going to like wear suits and
yes.
whatever and photograph myself and send it to you.
Please
like,
do.
Like tag you somewhere.
For me, okay. So it comes down to the definition of like what is rich and what is luxury. Because
mm-hmm.
the UAE kind of warps your definition of it. Like chasing,
right?
you know, I don't know what we chase. When you first arrive here, you sometimes think, oh, I've got to make millions or I've got to, I don't know what that is. Luxury is when everything is tailored to fit your body. Whatever size you are, it's made to fit your body. No one can put it on and it won't.
You speak my language.
You know, that's luxury.
There is infrastructure
yes.
going on
Oof.
In this, like tailoring. Like I understand, I have pattern made and cut these things. There is like architecture.
Yes, there is.
There is architecture going on.
Yeah.
So that's why I love fashion so much because it's like wearable art.
It is. Absolutely.
Okay? When it's done well, when it's
right.
done beautifully, it looks so incredible.
And it's a statement. Like that's who you are, right? And
today.
I think that's, yeah.
It's who you are
yes.
today.
In that moment.
Right now.
you know?
Yeah. In that moment, you're articulating who you are without talking to anybody,
yes.
right?
Yes.
That's your brand. That's what you represent and what you stand for.
But also it just changes how you feel.
Oh, yes. all the
Don't
time.
Don't you just feel completely different when you put on an incredible piece of clothing?
All
100%.
The time.
You just go, whoa.
Yeah.
Like
yeah.
you just go, I didn't know I could feel like this.
You ha-
yeah.
Then a soundtrack plays in the back of your head.
yes.
And that's your music for the rest of the day.
Like,
I totally get it.
Like you know, Silk Sonic Skate or something. Like,
yes.
You
yes.
know, something.
100.
This like vibe happens.
Exactly.
And you just go, yes. Bring it on.
So returning to styling, is it styling or is it design? What's the difference? What's the difference between styling and design? I think some people will ask.
Oh, I mean, you know, design is like, you know, you design something, you
right.
create. Styling is like a different kind of creativity. Like for me, like this whole style thing happened, like style is discovering who you are.
Yes.
Through clothing.
Yes.
There
and
we
then,
go.
You know, you could design something if you're a designer, whatever. But styling is a kind of design. But, you know, for me, I just was like, I've gone through this big stage in the last couple of years where, you know, I kind of got to know my body.
Really?
Mm.
Because like for the first 41 years of my life, I didn't want to know my body because I was always the big girl. I loved food. I ate because, you know, I just wanted to hide pain.
Mm.
You know, that
mm.
was my
truth.
That was my, you know, poison of choice, if you like.
Are you comfortable going down that journey
Let's
and talking
do it.
About it? Okay,
Let's
good.
Do it.
Let's do that.
Let's do
so
it. Yeah, I talked about it recently actually
yeah.
on a podcast about, you know, body and what that means. And so, yeah, I've just been like…
Great. So what kind of pain were you dealing with that resulted in you going for eating as a choice of poison?
I think it was lots of different kinds of things. I think for me, I was just like just bigger, just generally bigger, always the tallest one in the class, always just, you know, fuller and bigger and just didn't, you know, kids just will call you fat.
Oh, yeah.
They're just mean. They would just be mean.
The 90s was savage, bro. I don't know how we're here.
Girl, right. Like,
the 90s
girl,
was savage.
Late 80s, okay? We're talking late 80s here.
Today,
90s, yeah.
Today, yeah. Kids are like, no, don't do that. That's impolite. And like, kids have an understanding that bullying is wrong. Like,
right.
You know,
body positivity.
Yeah. Like my younger brother, I remember when he was back in school, he'll get into fight with other kids because I'm like, why'd you fight with them? And he said, oh, they were bullying that guy. They understand that concept.
Right.
For
right.
us, that's just what made you tough. Right.
Right. You just deal with it. You just roll with it. Yeah. You just are. That's just, you know, what it is. Just, you know, suck it up and just, you know, move on. And so I was like a real loner and… Because I loved school and I loved learning and I loved that. And, you know, obviously that made me even more of a target.
Everything,
you know,
that was not cool
glasses,
in the 80s.
Not at all, you know. And then we moved to Australia when I was like 8. And that was interesting because, you know, even stuck out even more so.
Wow.
So like literally, you know, this really tall, big girl. Black hair to here, like in the school photo, it was just kind of hilarious, you know, pick the Arab kid, right?
Yeah,
type of thing. And I will never forget, like, so you know, in the Middle East, right? What is the greatest thing that is brown and silky and comes in a jar?
Honey,
brown, think brown,
like dips,
like chocolate brown, molasses? like Nutella.
Oh. Nutella itself.
Are you a Nutella fan?
I am, but I've been avoiding Nutella for years.
No, don't do that.
Don't abandon
don't
her.
Do that.
But yes, I am a huge
Nutella
fan.
Are you a Nutella fan?
A huge fan.
Okay. Yeah. So this is our thing in the Middle East, right? Nutella, okay, is
right.
the greatest thing that is
it
brown
is.
That comes in a brown jar, right?
And I can't stop
and
if I started.
Right?
I can't.
Okay. So, okay, imagine this. Like this 8-year-old kid, you know, gets put into an English as a second language class with all of these, you know, other kids who are fresh in the country. And the teacher wants to introduce us to all these things that are, you know, Australian. And so she's got this jar that is full of brown stuff. Okay. And I'm thinking, oh my God, Nutella. Yeah. This must be the Australian Nutella. I'm so excited. And so she hands the jar around with a teaspoon, gives everybody a teaspoon. I take my teaspoon and I swear to God, I went
deep.
To the bottom of the
no.
jar. I heaped it up and shoved it straight into my mouth.
Oh, no.
And you know what it was?
Please don't say Marmite.
Feeling.
Please don't
it's
say
it's called
like
Vegemite in Australia.
Oh,
that's
no.
exactly what it was. And
oh
I got the
God.
Shock of my life. And I was just like, this is not.
You're like, this country,
this
I need to go back home. I need to go back home. We have made a grave mistake.
Yeah.
I must return.
So,
oh,
you
God.
Know. Stuff like that, you just go, oh my gosh, you know, I'm not sure that I fit in here.
No,
of course
you
not.
Don't. You're like, yeah.
Yeah, like but, can never go back to that.
Yeah. But you know, like it's just, I think it was just really interesting because we were just Arab and Muslim and growing up in Australia and literally in the Bible Belt of Sydney.
Wow.
Like, so that's where we grew. So literally like when I went to high school, My brother and I were literally like the two Arab Muslims in a school of 1,400 kids.
Wow.
Okay. So, you know, like we would like fast Ramadan. We would like, you know, try and do stuff.
Well, you were trying to keep ties to your home and your culture and your religion.
But at the same time, you just kind of go, I'm not really like… You know, you don't meet other people who are like you.
Yeah.
And you don't really… We used to go to Saturday school and whatever, but it never was like… You didn't feel like you belonged
right.
there either. Yeah.
So, were more reasons to make you feel like an outcast.
Yeah. So, it was just kind of like growing up like that and just kind of like going, okay, well, who am I? You know, as you get older, you ask those questions. You go, well, who am I and where do I really fit in? And particularly as you finish high school and you go to uni, that's where it really kind of struck for me. And I was just like… You know, what is going on and what, you know, like, where am I really going with this and where do I fit in? And, you know, and so that's kind of what started that journey of self-discovery and trying to find, you know, other people who are like me, who are Muslim, who are Arab, who are also Australian. You know, this is the thing, like we grew up in Australia. So I consider myself Australian.
Yeah.
right? But like, you know, like you guys.
Well,
you know,
I consider myself Canadian because I grew up in Canada, and you can't extricate that from me.
Exactly.
It is a part
it's
of
a
my
big part
DNA.
Part of who you are now.
Yeah, I'm proud of it. It's given me my voice, like I'm sure. But the truth is, you still look for your likeness. You're still looking. Like,
yeah, so you're looking for that, you know, Canadian, but Iraqi Filipino if they exist.
Exactly.
You know?
I mean, that's what I was going to say. Like, you are all of those things.
Yeah.
That's what makes you Reem.
Yeah.
That's what makes you incredible, you know? And you as well.
Yeah.
You know, that's that you know, in the 90s…
Experiencing the different worlds, yeah.
There wasn't that… You know, apart from people like Amin Maalouf, you know, like talking about identity, you know, like and saying, you know, I can't, you know, like distance myself from one part of my identity. I'm French, I'm Lebanese, I'm this and this. It would be like cutting off part of myself.
Yes.
Right.
You know,
and
there wasn't that understanding. And then 9/11 comes along.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Changed my whole
life. Did it?
Life.
Tell me.
So… I want to hear in a moment where you were, because everyone remembers, but I happened to be in school and it happened to be that day I went over to my friend Bianca's house
Canada?
For lunch. I was in Canada.
Okay.
We were in Toronto or in Mississauga, like a suburb of Toronto. And regular day, went for lunch. We came back and everyone was like, something really bad's happened. And they rolled the TV into our lunchroom, into the cafeteria. Mm. And everybody just watched. The first plane hit and then a little while and then the second plane hit. And our teachers were sort of in shock. And then the Arab guys began to get upset.
Right.
And this was a moment where I told Bianca, I'm like, can we go back to your house, please? Because I didn't know where to be. I didn't know where… I'm very social and I had many friends from different… But I saw my friends, the Arab guys, getting really upset and starting to fight. It became very challenging in that moment. So I went and retreated to Bianca's home and she made me a Nutella sandwich.
Right? Nutella fixes everything.
Yes. Yeah. And I just remember thinking, not really knowing, but kind of knowing like we all did, our lives will never be the same.
Yeah.
That was it. And then the years that followed taught me about race and critical race theory very, very intensely.
I love that you said that because, you know, I was in Sydney at the time. And so like a couple of years before, it was really interesting because I'd switched from fashion design to going… So, okay, I wore the hijab for like 18 years.
Wow.
Mm. So since I was like about 21. And so… And then, you know, like in that whole identity thing, I was trying to find, you know, the community. There was a Muslim community in Sydney and became part of that and was looking at it going, my God, there's so much Islamophobia. People don't get… You know, us, who we are, they call us terrorists. You know, we're misrepresented all the time. And so, like, that's where my work was already. Like, I'd already moved into that space because I wanted to break down the misconceptions against Muslims and particularly Muslim women who wear the hijab.
Yeah.
You know, massive… I mean, oh my God, I remember the first day that I walked in to work and, you know, the woman who I worked with, who I had a great relationship with and everything and… Like I'd changed nothing in what I was wearing except now I had a beautiful red silk scarf on my head and she just kind of like did a double take and went, are you all right, love? Like just like literally didn't know what to say, didn't know how to take it. And that was her being nice. You know, imagine the people who were like, oh my God, I'm going to rip your scarf off and all of that stuff. That was happening.
Unbelievable. I think it was much more difficult in environments where there weren't large… There's a huge Muslim community.
Oh, without a doubt. Because the thing is that even though as an Arab that grew up in Australia and you identify as Australian, in a moment like that, you're an easy target.
That's it. You're done.
I'm a chameleon. I can very easily
fit
in and assimilate and nobody could tell who I am or what I am.
Exactly.
But with women, as soon as you put that on…
If you put a hijab on, you're done.
That's it, right? And those who resist and choose to still wear it, I have so much respect for them because you are such a fighter. You're a much stronger human than I've been any other. Of course, it shouldn't. But unfortunately, that's the reality of it until today, you know?
But exactly right. You know, but back to that morning, you know, for us it was… So it happened on a Tuesday morning for us in Australia. The time difference, you know, meant it was Wednesday morning. So I was going to class and I had exactly the same thought. Like our lives will never be the same again, you know, after that. And just going, oh my God, what has this unleashed right now? And so exactly, you know, and it's kind of like, you know, I people know me for being in radio, but that's how I went into radio. Like I was asked to, people were like, oh, you're a really good public speaker. Do you want to come and do a radio program? And I was like, okay. Like, you know, and this was literally like, you know, Sydney Community Radio. There was very few programs in English and they were like, come and do something. And we were like, okay, well, and so this was like our chance, you know, to actually tell our stories, talk about who we are.
Yes.
What we do, what we believe in, you know, like, you know, our dreams, our hopes, our fears, you know, all of that stuff. Speak for yourself, for ourselves. Yeah. 'Cause we were nowhere to be found in the media.
You had to own your narrative and you had to own your voice.
Oh, you were being spoken for.
Oh my gosh.
You were being spoken for. Yeah. Like CNN was doing all the talking for you.
Oh my God.
You know,
and yeah.
I just knew like most of the women in my father's side of the family, most of them wear hijab. They're practicing Muslims by their own choice.
Yeah.
And this idea that they are now targeted because of something completely out of our.
I remember not too long after that, because we would frequent Europe a lot in summers. And my mom not only is a hijabi, but she became a niqabi later.
Mm-hmm.
And her creative approach to it, she would get like color dead bias. Right?
When
we travel
it.
Abroad. And this drunken white lady at 11 a.m. down the streets of London skips everybody and goes for my dad. And how dare you? You are putting them down. And yeah. Da-da-da-da. She's coming at him. And my dad has a diplomatic approach. He's like, I told her to take it off. If you can convince her, please go right ahead.
That's on her.
Right? He's like, that is her problem. I told her not to and she insisted. Please talk to her.
I love it. Oh it my gosh. Off. But that's the thing. That's how you learn to adapt. And you just kind of have to like, unfortunately, roll with the Islamophobia and the racism that happens. You know, and I remember a friend of mine, like, you know, she met a woman and just passed by a woman in the grocery store and she smiled at her and the woman goes to her, don't smile. Terrorists don't smile.
Oh,
and it's
wow.
Like, whoa, okay. You know, and you know, you would get stuff like that.
Yeah.
You would always get stuff like that. You know, this was, we're marking 20 years since September 11th this year.
We are.
So, and we're still getting stuff like that. You know, until recently, you know, I didn't take the hijab off that long ago, but I would get the most horrendous, horrendous things being said. And you just go, I can't believe you just said that. It's like, you can't even react in the moment because you're just,
it's ludicrous.
It's shocking.
It's so,
it's so ridiculous.
It's so ridiculous. And you're like, I can't believe, you know, you look and the year is, the year is 2021.
Right.
You know
you
what I mean?
You have to look at them. You go, what the hell is going on?
Yeah.
How are we still here?
Yes.
Yeah.
How are we still going, oh no, Muslim women who wear the hijab cannot be employed, you know, in Europe or wherever. Mm-hmm. And, you know, like, no. Like, what?
How?
Yeah. How is that happening? Or in France? Or where?
In France.
That should
France
not be
particularly.
Happening.
Yeah.
That should not be happening.
So I find what's wonderful is many of the people who I love and adore somehow found their way into community radio, community centers, the YMCA.
Right.
Because it was, you owned your narrative. Because like I mentioned, our stories were being told for us. And nobody, you know, unless you were Fox News or CNN, you really weren't.
You had to.
Yeah, you had to say mm-hmm. something.
This was the only place. I mean, this was as well before social media now, which is super powerful and incredible.
Yeah.
You know, like we were like a bunch of young women, young Muslim women. We started a magazine. We started radio shows. And,
well
you
done.
Know, like, so, you know, fast forward like, you know, 20 years, this was the only way because like we had to not only take back our narrative, but we had to find ways of showing how we were a central part of Australian society and we were building this society as well.
Yes.
And now, thankfully, we have, you know, Muslims who are at the top of media in Australia, which is pretty incredible. You know, they're friends of mine and I love and adore them and they're doing unbelievable things. But that's where it all started.
Amazing. Shout out to them.
The camps together, the Muslim youth camps and whatever.
Yeah.
And that's what we did because we had to hang on to every shred of who we are and who like what our identity is and build on that, build something beautiful because what we were being told is that we were nothing, that we were terrorists, that we were useless, that like it was just incredibly destructive. And we had to build a new narrative against all of that. And that's just something that I've carried, you know, ever since that you know, first whatever radio show, that I just wanted to tell the stories of people whose stories weren't being told.
Yeah.
You know, and this is like the most important thing to me, you know.
Right.
In what I do, yeah.
Do you talk to your kids about that?
About September 11?
I mean, how to deal with Islamophobia or racism and
What about
today?
September? See, do we talk
or
to our
September
kids?
September 11, yeah. Like,
do kids know about September 11?
See, that's a really interesting question. I don't think we've actually, you know, broached it yet. I think we will coming up next month. But, you know, it's interesting, you know, growing up in the UAE, in Dubai, they are just, you know, surrounded by so many cultures. And I think it's a different experience, particularly because they're in a Middle Eastern country.
Yes.
Yeah.
Right? So growing up in a Middle Eastern country, I was going to say Muslim country, but, you know, that's another weird misconception as well. Christianity originated in the Middle East too. People think Christianity equals the West when…
Yeah.
It doesn't,
tack is like,
right?
Yeah, tack is like, yes.
You know, so my kids are, you know, Palestinian, Iraqi, you know, they were born in Australia, but they never lived there.
Right.
Right? But, you know, they're around people from so many different cultures. So they're much more aware now. They're much more aware of what goes on. And because of social media, they're just more aware.
Right.
They see it.
Yes.
They get it. It's being covered in ways that it didn't get used to get.
Oh,
public,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah. What we saw from the ground of anything in the 90s was really manicured or curated.
100%.
Whereas now, when you block Twitter, I know you've done something wrong. Like when a government shuts Twitter down, I'm like, I know you're doing something real bad right now.
Yeah.
Because there's no reason for me not to see what's going on.
Right.
You know?
And we came from it. Like for us growing up here was a different experience as well when you see September 11. I mean, I clearly remember it. Our old house in Sharjah. I think I was out playing soccer. For us, it was the other way around. It was nighttime.
Right.
Saw it. Come back home, everybody at home was watching TV and we're seeing this go down. And every station you flip through was showing the same thing.
Right.
Right?
Right.
Whether it was the CNN, the BBC, Al Jazeera. We didn't have Fox News here. And, you know, or any of the local news stations. They all were showing it.
All of it.
And as it happens, and this was the only bit that I remember was interesting. I don't know if that happened. Is that what you guys saw? But I remember at the time, Al Jazeera would then show you like mini clips of who these people are.
No, we didn't get any of
on
that.
The side. So, you know, when you have picture on pictures and they will show you, okay, these are the people. And there's some narrative about them. Oh, they grew up here or this person was from there.
Oh, you mean about the people who were in the tower.
Yeah.
Oh,
so
yes,
they were not only showing you the towers or the news talking. Somehow they managed to get this footage of them very quickly.
Because that's nighttime or like by like the…
It was live, but it was our nighttime because we're 8 hours ahead of New York City.
Right.
So that's when we were watching this. And then the weeks to follow, if it's not in the news, it's documentaries. And Al Jazeera, I remember, was fast with it. They had this whole docu-series on the upbringing and the stories of these people. And trying to switch the narrative of this is not… us, but this is what terrorism looked like and this is what's been happening. And obviously picking up on the history of issues happening in the region. But then you switch to American or Western stations, completely different storytelling, right? Where it's like, no. The Arabs, Islamophobia, you can see the seeds being built.
Well, it was very much, you know, when Bush went up there and said, you're either with us or you're against us.
Yeah.
That was
done.
A decisive moment.
You know, what's the war on terror? Like, what is that? Like, you know, God, look at the destruction that happened because of that. I cried the day that they went and did shock and awe Iraq. Like I was driving to uni and I had to stop the car and sob uncontrollably because what the hell?
What's happening to our home? But it was a home that we left. Like, so shock, by the time shock and awe happened, my family had left Iraq by then. But the first Gulf War… right after that, we were there, like sanctions, we were there. And when you think of the destruction, you don't really understand it, you know? You don't understand that, no, every minute there are people dying now. This is war. And I feel like your tears were the tears of all women, you know? Because how are we going to the identity that you fought so hard to maintain. Your Iraqi-ness was a part of what made you special,
right,
and different. And all they're going to see when they switch on the TV is bombs and crying and women, yeah, and children dying. And I just
and
am
it was
so
scary
frustrated.
Because then even in the later years when I went to study in the US, I remember before leaving, my dad was like, if you go to pray in the mosque, don't go to the same mosque twice.
Yeah.
Like to that point where…
The warnings for
yeah,
sure. 100%.
Don't go to the… Find out where they are. If you just rather pray at home, don't go.
He's
if you
like,
don't
you know
have
what?
To.
Pray
like,
at home.
Yeah. Yeah, it was like that.
Like how because, can… How, what kind of a world did we
right?
create? You know
yeah.
what I mean? It's no, it makes me that. Sad to hear that. That's the pinnacle yeah. of
and
where
the fact that,
left
you know,
to.
Every time that they would have like news reports, they would just have like, you know, just random… You know, they'd be like, oh, and the terrorists did this. And then they yeah. would just have like random pictures of women in hijab.
Right.
For absolutely
that
no reason.
That stock footage?
Yes.
Completely unnecessary.
That, no, but that, you know, fueling
yeah.
that
yeah.
hideous, incredible narrative. So yeah. there was so much like…
And I think that's so why much. It's paramount and more important for people like Q and Reem to exist behind a mic and in front of a camera.
Exactly.
There's a lot to be said in these spaces.
Yeah. It's a, yeah. I feel like I agree, but I also feel conflict when you say that because I'm not representative of the current Iraq. You know, I'm representative of a different Iraqi.
Right.
An Iraqi who is extremely privileged who left. Yeah. I give that voice
but
to
I
the
think,
table.
But that's the tool, right?
Yeah.
You're using that privilege to be a voice and a beacon because media is soft policy.
Yeah,
right?
It is.
So use the power of media that you have and the opportunities and the privilege that you have, you know, to speak on it and to say and to share that. And that's what, you know, a lot of the stories we've covered on the show as well has been part of that, of all of this deserves a voice. And that's why the show was always meant to be in English.
Yeah.
To address that. Because if it was
I
in Arabic,
that.
Nobody was ever going to listen to us.
No,
we're
but
in
I love
an echo
that.
Chamber.
Because no, because that's what you're doing. You're taking the voice of the Middle East to the world. You know, that's
yeah.
what we do. That's… You know, that's the work that we do. We were taking the voice of, you know, Arab, you know, Muslims in Australia to hopefully, you know, the world at the time or whatever, wherever we were reaching. And then, you know, it grows. It just grows. It makes a difference. You know, when someone meets you, Reem, and they're like, oh my God, you know, she's an Arab woman. She's Iraqi. And, you know, like you change, you instantly change what they may have thought previously. If they had negative views about, you know, Muslim or Arab women or, you know, Asian women.
Yeah,
or,
absolutely.
You know, because
and,
that's
but,
who we
but
are.
You do that too, you know. Mm-hmm. And I think that's why I'm so… Whenever I see like Sally in the landscape of media, I'm so happy because yeah. I see my likeness. I see… I'm like, there she is. She's… And if you wouldn't be there, I think it would be a loss. I think we would have lost something if your light wasn't there. Because… You know how it is. You're behind the mic. We're sometimes in our laptops. I'm like the laptop emoji girl. You know what I mean? And sometimes you just want to look up and see like, okay, in the distance, there's a marker and it's not that far away from me. I think we all need that. So yes, you're right.
Yeah.
Our voice is absolutely necessary. But how do we get it? How do we take that stone and throw it into ponds that are still right now farther away than we could have thrown than before, that's the new challenge of media. I hope we figure it out fast because we've got to figure it out fast, right?
Yeah.
But okay, so here's a question. What is Iraq to you now? Because I'm so conflicted about my Iraqi identity. I have no problem like saying how conflicted I am because it's…
Why are you conflicted?
Okay, so at the heart of it, I have a guilt because my family managed to leave at a time when a lot of people couldn't. And there was a lot of shock and awe, like we mentioned, happened after I left. And I feel a sense of guilt and disconnection, which when I speak to my friends who are still activists in Toronto, who are organizing and still a part of a really, you know, a strong voice for the Arab, like, you know, world, they say that's what they want you to feel. They being the system against us. They want you to feel disconnected. They want you… But it's with them, like it's in your blood. You can never take out what is Iraqi about you.
Mm.
But when my brother's 13 years younger than I am, he's never lived in Iraq, and he's half Iraqi, half Filipino too. When he Googles Baghdad, what comes up is massacre. Like the word that I have is like, it looks like a massacre. The Iraq that I remember was beautiful. It was artists and poets.
How old were you when you left?
I was 15 when I left.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's amazing because I've never lived there.
Yeah.
I was born in Basra.
Oh, I'm Basrawi too.
Okay, yeah, high five. Basrawi. High
five. But I've never lived there. Like, yeah. I've visited a couple of times. So I'm even more disconnected than you. And like, I don't even know my grandparents. Like, I've never spent enough time with them to actually know them.
Yeah.
Which, like, I reflect on a lot. And it makes me so sad.
Yeah.
You know, because they've passed on. And like, I don't, like, you know, and even, you know, because I grew up in Australia. So like, you know, my Arabic wasn't even that strong. Like, even with my dad, you know, he was so… Like, you know, my parents tried to give us as much as possible from what they could, having, you know, left. But, you know, it's mostly the food.
It's the food.
And the music.
And the music. Yes, you know? Yes. It's
Nazm
the food.
Al-Ghazali.
Yes.
Are you with me, babe?
Yes, 100%. But as soon as you said that,
Saadun Jabir.
Yeah, so we had cassettes. We didn't have… We just had cassettes. On cassettes. And they would play…
For Gen Z that don't know what it is, Google it.
Oh, what a cassette? They know what a cassette is.
I hope they do.
They still have them.
They still sell them in Sharjah.
No, you can find them at Urban Outfitters.
It's cool again.
Yeah, it's cool again.
But so when you say, like, it's funny, the food is our inherent connection. You're absolutely right.
That's it. That's because that's the only thing you can take with you.
Yes.
You can only take the food. You can take the music.
Yeah.
That's all you can take.
And
everything
if you're lucky,
else
you got
has
VHS
to stay
tapes.
Back. And you go, but you know, Dolma.
Dolma is the quintessence. Yeah. So for our listeners who may not know, Dolma is the… You know how every country has a roll, like a stuffed cabbage. Or ours is this beautiful, like, onions or zucchini or vine leaves.
It's all of it.
It's actually all of it.
It's a representation of Iraq. You put it all in one pot. And then the bottom where it's burnt is the best part.
Yep. And, and for the non-Iraqis, let me walk you through it this way. If you have insomnia, have dolma.
Yeah, you'll
knock out right after.
Yeah. It's just the greatest food karma on earth.
Yeah, and like, it's ceremonial too, the way we do it. Because the pot has to be turned over onto a large tray that everybody eats from. So for me, whenever I see this practice of the to turn it over… I feel a deep sense of connection to that practice because after we tip everything over, we eat together. And it's been the way we've done
it. You eat from the same tray. Sure. It's just one tray. Yeah. People don't have plates. You just pick up from there and you eat together. And yes, the onions always go on the bottom.
They do.
And they caramelize.
Oh, yeah. So
and they stick to the bottom of the pot. I'm just going to cry as I'm speaking. Yeah.
I'm the drool emoji right
but
now.
But it's just like literally the greatest thing.
So I guess if you look at Iraq metaphorically, the burnt bits are the best part.
Wow.
But but that's the thing, you know, and like stuff like, you know, kahi, for example.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
Reem has taken me on like an Iraqi food tour.
Wait a minute. Is there kahi?
There is kahi.
Yeah. We're going to talk after the
We'll
show.
Talk after. Yeah. There's kahi gamer here. And I had to, I didn't explain it very well. So I had to like bring OT, but it's essentially your cream and pastry of Iraq. Like it is a heavy cream and a pastry and you
with
eat
it. With coffee in the morning?
With coffee. Syrup. Yeah. And what's and that? A wonderful like syrup on top. It's a deconstructed pie.
Well played.
And I
it's
love
like
it.
Heaven. You know, and so that's the only stuff really that we had a connection to. So it makes me sad. I feel so sad that I don't, like you said, I have even less of a connection to my homeland than you do.
Yeah.
I'm amazed that you left at 15. Like, that's amazing. You would have absorbed quite a bit.
I did.
Yeah.
I did. I had the privilege of that. But yeah, like I think the food is where we connect.
Yeah. And what was the little ones with the tea, the cinnamon baked goods?
Kleche.
That's the, yo.
Kleche is our, Kleche is our mini empanada.
No, I like how
it's
you
sweet.
Just like internationalized
yeah.
it. I'm just trying to, you know, it's mamoul.
It's like a little cookie,
world.
Right? Yeah, that goes with your coffee or tea.
It's a date-filled cookie.
Yes.
And the ritual of women cooking and passing on the recipe. You'll find most Iraqi women who grew up near their, like the other women in their family will have a recipe. If not, you'll have a brand that you're like super loyal to.
Right. I jump roped so I can have that.
Yeah, you've been good.
I will train so I can have those.
Oh my God. It is good.
Like
it's
Nutella.
Addictive.
Exactly. Yeah. I have zero discipline. I will not stop till it's finished.
I'm with you on that, seriously. But no, like, so like I didn't make dolma until like last year.
Really?
Yeah, because I was just like, this is sacred.
It is like, sacred.
Like I just wanted to eat it only from my mother's hands.
I get that. Mm.
But then like, you know, she started getting like a bit older and just didn't want to make it so much anymore. And I was like, well, I guess I'm going to have to learn.
Here yep. we go.
I have to look because you have to keep the line going, right?
This is our heritage. This exactly. is our, you know.
Exactly.
And like, yeah, I can make a mean dolma. I can do that. But I do feel when I do it, I feel a homesickness.
Yes.
Which I don't understand. Because my home, as I traveled a lot as a child. So I don't have a home that I'm pinning it to. It's not like I had a childhood home that I miss. But I think what I miss is, and this is something that I should take on board. We cannot let the memories of Iraq be 9/11,
exactly.
Saddam,
exactly.
Bush. They cannot define that. There's so much more to us. And I think
it's
maybe that's…
It's your artists, it's your writers, it's the food.
But you're just, you're homesick for belonging.
Yes, I am.
It's not, there's no place.
No, no.
It's just that feeling of… I'm here. I'm home.
Yeah.
I belong.
Yes. And to look around and to see people who are your kin.
Yeah.
That's it's a strange…
That's so big.
Yeah. Mm. It's a strange longing, you know, that I get. I get that. And I… food… Yeah. Okay. I'll eat dolma till I drown and then we're good. Right? It fixes the problem. No problem.
Oh my God. I'm with you on that.
Oh, definitely.
Yeah.
I think… Yeah. It's just one of those things. The more… You talk about it, the more people get to understand that this is what it is. This is your Iraq, or this is the Iraq that should be known, right? Rather than when Adam, your brother, goes and Googles it.
Oh, he won't anymore. Know? He won't do it. It hurts. He doesn't understand it.
Exactly.
He won't Google it.
Right.
You know?
That's what he should experience. He should know what a dolma tastes like.
Oh, he does.
You know? He should know what these things, these experiences are like. And, you know, when… If he can find an Iraqi… restaurant in Berlin to take his people and kind of pass that on and show them this is who we are.
Oh yeah.
Right?
Speaking of Iraqis, my brother's a drag queen in Berlin.
Nice.
Yeah. So…
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. So connecting him… When I think of the next generation, I think of him and the world he is navigating. And I just think about like, you know… At the end of it, what I had hoped for, you know, when he was younger and we were kind of trying to teach him how to be.
Right.
My hope was that… He would seek the goodness in Arabs because he was constantly told the same thing that you were told, which is that, you know, how can you be so oppressed? How can, like, and it was a question posed to you as though you had control of your narrative. It was, it's very confusing for young people.
I remember doing an interview one time, like, you know, I was being interviewed for, you know, being a radio host and wearing the hijab and you know, but trying to be, you know, some kind of a community. Not really. It's like, I don't want to say the word activist, but just trying to do my bit, you know, in the community, right? And I will never forget, she said to me, do you think you're political? You will always get that question. I'm like, being like, you know, think about what being political means. Being political means you stand for something.
Yeah.
Because like, you know, if you don't stand for anything, then you won't be political to anyone.
Right.
You know, but if you stand for something, you're going to be political to someone.
You're immediately politicized.
You're always politicized.
Always. Yeah. But like, it's like, I don't belong to any political party or anything. But if I'm standing up for humanity and standing up against, you know, Islamophobia and standing up for Muslims and standing up for fairness, if you want to call that political.
Then I'm political.
Yeah. But like…
yeah.
So, they will try to find ways to just… Doesn't matter what you're doing.
Right.
To minimize it. Yeah. So, you there's all kind of things that you're fighting up against.
So, may I ask, why did you choose to not wear the hijab anymore? Was that like a very personal…
Yeah. I would say that is just… Yeah. Me on my personal journey.
Yeah.
And that's all I'm going to say about it. Mm-hmm. Simply because, you know, I still very, very, very much support every Muslim woman who wears a hijab.
Yeah.
And I will always speak up for them as well. So I will always, you know, say, you know, that they have to be included everywhere. And, you know, I would make sure on my shows I was featuring Muslim women who wear the hijab. And I don't… And that is… Here's the thing about hijab. as well, that we talk so much about what women wear and what they have on their heads. We completely minimize everything else that they are.
Thank you for saying
and
that.
Do.
Thank you for saying that.
And this is my thing.
Yeah.
You know, I don't have a thing for hijab or against hijab, but we have to stop doing that.
Yeah.
We have to stop talking about what women are wearing or not wearing.
Yeah.
Really, really. Because it minimizes their spirituality.
Mm. Their intellect.
Their intellect.
Their experience.
Their experience. Just simply who they are.
Agreed.
Yeah. They are not, you know, what, you know, women suffer with this, you know, no matter what, whether you're Muslim or non-Muslim, you know, women are very much defined by their relationship to other people.
Yep.
And whether they're pleasing other people, whether it is their parents, are you the obedient daughter?
Yeah.
You know?
Are you the, you know, the what, the good wife?
The good wife.
Capital G, capital
after
W,
that,
you know?
You know, are you doing well at school?
Yeah.
You know, are you the good mom?
Yeah.
Are you keeping your kids happy? Yeah. Are you making sure you have enough children?
Yeah.
Like, there are all of these kind of expectations. Oh, are you wearing the hijab? Are you wearing the hijab properly? Why are you not wearing the hijab? Like, stop it.
Yeah.
Like,
it has no bearing. It should have no bearing because it is, and this is something that we do talk about. It is such a personal, it is such
choice.
A personal choice, but also it should have no bearing. It should have no bearing on the person that is in front of you.
No, exactly. You know? And it is not our job to judge anybody based on how they look.
Yeah.
That is
yeah.
none of our business.
Yeah.
Completely none of our business because right. there are, you know, people who don't dress the way that you think a good Muslim dresses and yet they are incredibly close to God.
Right. Yes.
And then there are people who are completely covered up that mm-hmm. are so far
yeah.
away.
Yeah.
None of our
and
business.
Nor do you owe anybody an explanation either.
Exactly.
Yeah.
yeah.
At the end of the day, it's nobody's business whether you wear it, whether you don't wear it. But this choice should be there.
Mm-hmm.
The choice must be there for women to be able to say, this is part of my spiritual identity. I'm going to wear it. It doesn't hurt anybody else. It doesn't do anything.
Yeah.
There are all kinds of ways to wear a hijab so that you can do surgery, so that you can race cars, so you can play football. There is nothing
that you can…
Nothing.
Yeah.
Anybody who says that wearing a hijab stops women from doing X, Y, Z, that is bull.
Yeah.
Oh,
you know?
Yeah.
Like, just stop with that. You know, don't, like you are oppressing women by saying that.
Yeah.
They have shown you that they can be gymnasts, that they can be, you know, football players, that they can be mountaineers, everything. They can do that. So let them be. Because the worst thing is, you know, forcing someone to uncover is just as bad as forcing them to cover. So just
agreed.
Don't put them as, you
yeah.
know, oh, you know, they need to be liberated. That is bull.
From what?
Exactly. From what?
From what?
Yeah.
We're all already in chains. Like, if you're going to, like, she's liberating herself. We've all got something to work on, you know?
Yeah,
but
definitely.
I appreciate so much what you've said because I think that so many of our listeners need to hear that. And I think it's important that we have the conversation, but also to make a point that it is about the choice, the freedom to have the choice without judgment, without any bearing, and the discipline to look at someone and choose their intellect first.
Exactly.
And choose their experience
first. Who they are.
Exactly.
Yeah. Who they are. See them for who they are.
Yeah.
And, you know, I have to say so many times I was not seen, you know, people see a hijab first.
Yeah.
Unfortunately. And we have to like stop doing that. Like
yeah.
just, you know, you've got a human being in front of you. Treat her like anybody else.
Yeah.
Approach her, you know, the way that you would anybody else. So, yeah, it's a
there
big
we
one.
Go.
Yeah.
I think that's a great note to wrap this one on.
Thank you for kicking it with us today. I hope you enjoyed listening to this week's episode as much as we enjoyed creating it for you. Please subscribe to the show wherever you get your podcast at to stay up to date with all our conversations. Also, if you don't mind, hit us with the 5-star rating, leave a comment, let us know how you feel about the show. That way, it could also help others find the show. And be sure to share it with your friends and family, whoever you think can benefit from it. You can holler at us on all social media platforms at The Can Show. We'd love to hear from you. Or you could drop us an email to hello@thecanmedia.com. Salam.